All right, here we go. Welcome into another edition of Baldwin and the Berg. We are, in fact, radioactive. As Imagine Dragons likes to say, we are radioactive. But
perfect punchline right there.
A couple of us today aren't feeling very radioactive, aren't we? I'll introduce everybody. I'm Austin Bechtold.
I'm Nathan Breisinger.
And I'm Andrew Goldvash.
And I want to ask Andrew Goldvash, we're not feeling very radioactive right now, are we, buddy?
Under the weather.
No, I've been a little bit under the weather the past couple days. Not too sure what it is yet, but I don't know. If we don't start having shows in the next month, that means all of us are dead.
We sure hope it's not the coronavirus, but, you know, you can't be too sure these days. And then Goldvash is starting to get me a little bit under the weather. So you can tell my voice is a little deeper. I think it's really just our room being so, so hot and then cold and then hot and then cold and just back and forth temperature that it's making my sinuses feel like they just want to throw up and punch me.
Okay, whoa. Warm weather has nothing to, like, being hot has nothing to do and anything that would help.
The back and forth fluctuation between temperature surely does. All right,
speaking of back and forth fluctuation, let's talk about the Pens.
Yeah, let's do that. They play in cold ice.
With some inconsistency as of late.
Yeah,
they dropped two to Tampa. They lost to Tampa last Thursday. Then they beat the Panthers on their little Florida trip as they take on the Tampa. And take on Tampa Bay every year and Florida right around the same time. First game they lost 4-2. But a nice bounce back, 3-2 win in Florida. And then they came back this week and lost in overtime to Tampa Bay 2-1 at PPG Paints. So a little bit of inconsistency right now going on, but it's just that time of the year. I mean, they came off, like last week, two big wins over rivals. So I wouldn't really question anything going on right now. Tampa Bay is a very good team.
I was about to say, yeah, Tampa's 20-3 in their last 23 games.
Yeah,
they've lost three. I mean, yeah, three games. I mean, this is a very hot hockey team.
Yeah, they
right
didn't
now.
Start so well to start the year, but now they're picking up heat, which they're a good team, and
They should have been doing this from the start, but I guess getting swept by Columbus probably had them in shock a little bit. I still think that at the beginning of the year. But they're falling through, and they're having a very strong season.
But so far since the All-Star break, it's easy to say that first game in Tampa Bay that they lost 4-2 was the Pens' worst game to date since that break, because there was just so many defensive lapses. Marino had a couple bad plays, and then he gets injured late in the game. Letang has a couple bad plays. Galchenyuk only saw 3 minutes of ice time before he was dealt away. And just not a very good game. There was a couple 2-1s. Sorelli scored on a 2-1-1. Stamkos scored on a 2-1-1. It was just a bad night. They were plagued with turnovers and sloppy defensive play. And they just never got it going. But the next game, I don't know. They got kind of lucky. I mean, all three of their goals were just about deflections, except Letang did have a nice breakaway out of the penalty box. Went forehand backhand to beat Bobrovsky. And then they come back home and play a more of a tighter knit game, and then they lose in overtime.
Yeah, Pens coming up this weekend on Friday, Valentine's Day. We'll get into Valentine's Day at the very end of the show here. But Pens sitting at 34-15-6. You know, pretty great season, accounting for just all the injuries that this team has had. And, you know, being second in the Metropolitan, only a few points behind Washington, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I really don't think you have to win the Metro to be able to go very far in the playoffs, as the Pens have been able to prove in their two cup years.
Exactly.
Tristan Jarry is expected to start on Friday. He's been pretty great, 18-8-1. Goals against average only 2.18. Pretty great. Save percentage at 92.9. And I just feel that, you know, let's just get into it right now. The big trade coming down only a few days ago with the Penguins. Going out and getting Zucker from the Minnesota Wild for what I believe is way too much. A first-round pick, Alex Galchenyuk, and defenseman Kalen Addison, who's a top prospect in this system, or at least was before being dealt. What do you guys feel about it? I am a little bullish on the trade because I know that Zucker has, 3 years remaining after this year? Galchenyuk, you had to move him to try to get the money off the books to afford Zucker. I really don't like giving up the first, even though it is going to be in the back half of the first round, at least you would believe. Kalen Addison's the big piece in this deal for me. I feel like he's a future top four, maybe even top two defenseman. And I just think that, you know, for a team that, you know, has a bunch of good depth pieces, if you can have someone like Addison who could be at the very top of your leaderboard in terms of defensemen, you know, you do have to give something. You have to give something to get something. But I think he's a piece that if you could do without, really shouldn't have traded him. What do you guys think?
Well, let me start off here. So I just wanted to do some comparisons. I think one of the worst trades in Penn's recent history was the Broussard deal that he was sort of maybe besides
the trade to acquire Derek Broussard, not to trade him away.
Oh, that trade away was beautiful because he brought back McCann and Bukestad. But coming into the Penguins, Zucker has better stats than Broussard did, and we gave up quite an extensive package to get Broussard, where we gave away a first-round pick, a third-round pick, Ian Cole, and you know, potential starting goaltender in the future, Philip Gustafson.
Yeah.
Whereas Kalen Addison, yeah, he's a good, talented prospect, but you got to look at the Malkin and Crosby era. It is closing. They want to win as much as they can, and I think Zucker bringing him in, I've mentioned this before with me and Golvash talking, he reminds me a lot of Jake Guentzel. He's going to play. He's fitting in right now where Guentzel is just not playing because he's injured. Zucker's short. I think he's a mix between, in Penguins terms, a mix between Guentzel and Dupuis. Quick strides. He gets to the areas of the ice where the puck's going to be. Crosby's going to feed him. Just like Crosby does with any player that comes in and plays with him, Crosby's going to feed him. And I think it could mesh really well. Obviously, the first game, it's not a big deal. Zucker had 5 shots on goal. So, I mean, he looked well for the first game, but they play Tampa, and Vasilevskiy's a hot goaltender. So I think this deal is fine. I mean, giving up a first and Addison is tough. Obviously, you get rid of Galchenyuk, who's just taking up time on the ice. But I think it was a smart deal. Yeah, you give up a first-round pick and Addison. It's tough, but so what? You get a good player that potentially could be really good. If he's a little bit of a bust, then I don't know. You just got to deal with it. But it's what you need to do in this time of time and point with the two players.
And I would like to mention Gustafson. He's not even in the NHL. He's not even like in the farm system or any NHL team anymore after that trade. So, like, I mean,
what happened to him?
He just didn't pan out in Ottawa. He just didn't. I mean, he was a hot commodity with us.
Well, he's still floating around the minors, though, right?
I don't think so. I don't know if he might be be over in the AKHL. I'm not too sure, but yeah. I mean, we don't with prospects. You don't know what you got. I mean, yeah, Addison was the top prospect in our farm system, but you don't know if he was like truly gonna pan out. I mean, yeah, with that, but like, yeah, I lost my train of thought.
Here's my problem. Here's my problem with this. Zucker was one of the guys believed to be the focus in a trade for Phil Kessel, which would have traded Phil Kessel over Minnesota, okay? And seeing the eventual return that the Penguins got for Phil Kessel being, what, the defenseman?
Pierre Joseph.
And Galchenyuk, who is not very great. I just think it's lacking in terms of if you were going to trade Phil Kessel for this guy, Phil Kessel is by far a better player than Jason Zucker is. Why is this the kind of return that you have to give up to go get him?
It's because that's how the market works when it comes to the trade deadline. And
yeah, like, I understand
that. He signs Chris Kreider. He was the hottest player on the market, and he's having, a subpar year, not like a great NHL season.
That's my 14, thing.
14 like, goals, 15 assists.
It does attest that the Wild have not been a very good team this year, point-wise.
I just feel like, I know he doesn't have much talent around him. I don't feel like this guy's that great. I mean, in terms of you're giving up a pick, a top player, and I guess what basically evens it out a little bit is dumping the Galchenyuk money. I mean, he is on an expiring deal, so how much of it really is a dump? But I just look at his stats in the past. Last year going 21 goals, 21 assists, even on either side, 42 points total. This year, 14 goals, 15 assists. So he's, you know, pretty consistent player in terms of goals and assists being very, you know, nearly the same. And, you know, 29 points on the year so far. I know the talent around him isn't there. I'm just concerned because you've seen with the Penguins bringing guys in recently, let's say Broussard, Galchenyuk, that have potential, okay? We know that they have potential. We know that they can play. But when they get on this team, the expectation is you're going to be an absolute star with Crosby and Malkin and playing with, you know, upper-tier guys like Guentzel, even though he's hurt and just seen in the past what they said with Broussard and with Galchenyuk, playing with Patrick Hornquist. I'm just a little wary because what we've seen from Broussard and Galchenyuk of here's another guy we're bringing in saying, okay, he's got lots of talent, he's got lots of potential, we'll put him with Crosby, and hey, he'll be completely fine just like that. Like, doesn't matter, he don't need to work on it, he'll just be completely fine once he's with Sid. It'll be a completely different player, and I just don't buy that.
I mean, I know a lot of people after this deal, if it doesn't work out, are going to come at Rutherford's neck, But he has made plenty of moves that have just helped out this team just fine.
Yeah, look, I don't try to question Jim Rutherford. When you win two Stanley Cups in your first couple seasons as a general manager of a team, I'm not going to question you very much. But at some points, you can't help but just wonder what exactly he was thinking. Now, I know that Zucker was a big get for him. This was his guy. This was the guy he's wanted for with the Kessel deal about a year now. So I understand if he's, you know, overpaying a little bit to be able to go get, quote-unquote, his guy. But I just feel like for the overall brass of the organization, having an extra defenseman like Addison, who would have been up next year, would have been good for the organization, obviously, when you have guys like Justin Schultz that are leaving. Not many years left of Chad Weedle. Yusso Rikola's deal's coming up. What do you have? You have Dumoulin, Letang, Don Marino, who will be a restricted free agent in a year or so. You'll be able to re-sign him. Marcus Pettersson just got a big long-term contract. I just think that if you can have young guys, you don't have to pay much. It's worth it. Now, look, it depends when the cup. No, I won't be talking. You guys won't. No one will be talking or complaining about this deal whatsoever because they get it done. But if they don't, that's where the discussion is going to ramp up back up again, like the Derek Brassard deal as, oh, goodness, this was awful.
No, but I think another thing within Rutherford's mind, at this point in time in a year for any NHL season, you want to try to make the biggest splash because that's just going to draw attention to your team. You want to look like you're making the right moves for a postseason run. But I think also another thing is the original Brassard trade did not work out one bit. I didn't like the trade from the get-go. He was a bust here in Pittsburgh. But then they moved him on and got a really good return for him when they sent him to Florida and they got Bukestad and McCann back. I think this trade is trying to make up for the Phil Kessel-Galchenyuk trade. I think trying to go out and moving Galchenyuk away and bringing Zucker, they're trying to bring in more offense where Galchenyuk just didn't seem to fit in. I think Zucker playing along with Crosby is going to be a good fit, like I mentioned before. He has a really Dupuis-Gensel-type playing style where Crosby has worked really well with players like that. He's going to go to the net. He's going to drive to the net. He's going to find open ice work. Galchenyuk, I feel like, I mean, in Montreal, he was one of the top players in Montreal. He was a top three guy on offense.
He was that main go-to guy that had they probably put him on the power play. He was their first line center. He did everything for them.
And then he went to Phoenix, didn't play so well, and came here and was horrible. So I think this move is sort of a makeup deal and obviously a big deal at the near the deadline to get in a guy that's going to hopefully produce for you more than Galchenyuk did, way more. Because then also you can look at the Tanev deal, where they signed him for maybe more than people would have liked, longer for them when people would have liked. But he's performed well. So I think this is where you give up a big return, you give away big pieces, but you get a return guy that can maybe produce as much as some of these other guys have who have played with Crosby.
Yeah, I like your points there. I understand them. I think at the beginning of the season, the Penguins were looked at as a wild card. No one really knew we were going to get from the team this year. No. Losing Kessel, losing a bunch of other players, getting guys back from injury, and the awful playoff performance last season against the Islanders, which they're really surprising a lot of people. And again, the expectations are through the roof because if you play this well, we expect you to win the Stanley Cup with Crosby and Malkin at the top of their game still. So that's where all the criticism comes in, and if Zucker could play a pivotal role, well, that would be a very big part of why this team will be successful down the stretch. Now, speaking of teams that need pivotal roles, big pivotal roles, and needs to add some talent onto their roster, the Pirates have started spring training, and for the first time in a long time, I don't really care.
And that's saying something coming from a diehard Pirates fan.
I really don't care. Now, look, I am excited to get the new Ben Cherington, Derek Shelton regime underway. Don't get me wrong there. I definitely am. A change was needed, a change was necessary, and a change finally happened. But I just feel like the momentum going into this season is not there, especially because what are we supposed to necessarily be excited about after? You know what it is? You know what we're supposed to be excited about? Hey, it couldn't have been worse than last year, right? Couldn't have been worse than players fighting each other.
At least we don't have Felipe Vasquez.
Felipe Vasquez is terrible acts. Keone Kelly getting suspended. hitting bullpen coaches, brawls with the Cincinnati Reds.
Who is now our closer, keep in mind.
Yasiel Puig trying to fight the whole team. Not great.
Chris Archer
giving up, 55 home runs into the Allegheny River.
How's that changeup working for you, Chris?
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to be throwing much of those changeups with Oscar Marin, the new pitching coach. But, yeah, Chris Archer he cut his dreads off, so.
Remember what happened whenever McCutcheon cut his dreads?
Oh, he was awful.
He was awful.
But remember what happened when Chris Archer did not have dreads? He was really good. So maybe it's just, counterintuitive to think otherwise or something. I'm not exactly sure. But the Pirates.
We're just throwing shots in the air at this point. We're hoping.
Stuff out there with the Pirates, kind of like the hopes and dreams of this season being any bit successful. So the Pirates signed Jerod Dyson to a one-year, $2 million deal. Anybody want to react to that? I guess he'll replace Starling Marte in center. Defensive run saves around 9-10. He's not bad defensively.
I think he's just a poor man's Kevin Pillar.
He hits like 240. And
yeah, his career average is 247. So not terrible. Doesn't hit the long ball whatsoever, which I think the Pirates kind of need.
He can steal some bases.
So
he can steal you some bases, pinch run.
It was a major league deal. The corresponding move to that was Jameson Taillon being placed on the 60-day injured list. Now, obviously, he will not be pitching this year because of Tommy John surgery late in the 2019 season. What do you guys think in terms of rotation, bullpen, overall makeup of the team? Is there any hope? I, for one, actually think that there somewhat is, and I'll give my record prediction, but I want to hear what you guys say first.
I think it's all about starting pitching, and if Trevor Williams and Chris Archer, I think those are your go-to guys right now. If they can bounce back after, a bad two – Archer, two bad seasons since he started with the Pirates. Williams had a strong finish to the 2018 campaign, but last year was not very good. It's all on starting pitching. It's also all in the bullpen. Hitting, I think, will be fine once again. I think Reynolds will have a nice year once again. I don't see a sophomore slump out of him. Hopefully he can at least average about 300.
Sophomore slump.
And then
hopefully not.
Dyson, I think he's just a throwing guy that can play center field, steal you some bases, which would be nice because there's no presence on the base paths. No one steals bases for the Pirates since
traded.
Since McCutcheon and Marte,
how many bases Reynolds steal?
Like five.
Yeah, he's not a base stealer. He's not extremely quick, where Dyson's probably good off the jump. But I think also the Pirates struck out on missing guys like Pillar and even maybe someone like Cameron Maben who can add a little bit more offense than Dyson can. They're both quick. They both can play – all three of them can play good defensively, but I think Pirates, missed a couple guys that can at least help offensively.
Well, the thing is with signing Dyson, it's basically a corresponding move to the Red Sox signing Pillar. Once Mookie Betts got traded officially after like a week in chaos to the Dodgers, there was an opening in the Red Sox outfield, and let's be completely honest here, would you choose the Red Sox, won the World Series a few years ago, or the Pirates? Who won the wild card game in 2013. I would probably pick the Red Sox if I were Kevin Pillar, and he sure did. Getting Jerod Dyson, it's just a guy you'll put at the end of your lineup, maybe at the top. Good clubhouse guy, veteran presence. Not really that noteworthy, but, someone that'll play center field for a little bit and probably try to be flipped at the deadline if you can get anything.
All right, another question, though, I have for our Pirates expert, Austin.
All right.
Where did Guillermo Heredia come from? Heredia.
So Guillermo Heredia, I don't know much, but I'll tell you what I know.
Oh, God. When Austin doesn't know much about him, he's not.
Hey, I've been very busy, as I'll get to in my relevant fact of the day. So Guillermo Heredia came from Seattle. He only hit like 210, 220. It wasn't very great. He's basically just a defensive outfielder. He's viewed as a fourth outfield kind of guy. And once the Marte trade was basically everybody, it was basically common knowledge that it was going to happen. Guillermo Heredia was probably like, yeah, I'll go play center field. And now he'll be the fourth outfielder, probably steal some bases at times.
I'd rather have Jason Martin be our fourth outfielder if he's healthy.
My whole thing with signing Heredia was why. I don't understand it. 1 year, I think it was $1 million.
Just call some guys up. I know it's about playing time, and they probably still want them to develop in the minor leagues.
Well,
but
if you're going to bring up Jason Martin, he should be playing, like, all the time, and I'd rather have him playing all the time instead of Heredia taking any at-bats away from him. So, look, I'm okay with Jerod Dyson because, like I said, leadership, clubhouse presence, steals bases, can play some center field. which allows you to keep Ryan Reynolds in left. That's really what you want to do long term with guys like Swagger D and other outfield prospects coming up, Sammy Siani being one of them. I think that in terms of just overall production, you're not going to get much from Heredia at all. He could be the next Eric Gonzalez, or he could be a pleasant surprise and be Adam Frazier or something. But even though I think Adam Frazier should be traded, but that's another topic. Let's bring that up.
That's another topic for another day.
No, let's talk about it now because we don't have much to talk about today. So Adam Frazier. So the guy that David Freese once said would win the batting title, yay, supposedly is good enough to be a candidate in the top three to win a gold glove. What games were you watching? I know we said this earlier on when it was first announced with Adam Frazier. I don't know what games you were watching unless he was very good in August and September when I turned my TV off. Then I don't know. I don't think he's all that he's hyped up to be. He strikes out a lot. At least the games I watch, he strikes out a lot.
I mean, look, if he's, you know, got all these credentials that he could be a good glover and actually can hit well, trade him for a return.
What was so interesting to me is the time of the winter meetings. The hot name was not Marte. It was not Josh Bell. It was not the rumblings of maybe Felipe Vasquez having any chance of coming back to baseball. It was Adam
Frazier.
And I said, what? I said, Adam Frazier. This is not the Twitter fan accounts that love to praise Adam Frazier.
These are
real people.
These
are real teams that want Adam Frazier. Now, Adam Frazier, don't be offended. We think you're a good player. I mean, we do.
No, Austin doesn't think you're
a
good player.
No, I think he's fine.
I think he's a perfect utility guy like Josh Harrison.
That's exactly right. I think he's a guy that should play the outfield. I don't think he's a guy that should be in your starting lineup every day.
No.
Throw him out there. His swing is better off the bench, I think.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen his pinch hit numbers have been phenomenal at times. I would move Newman over to second, and I'd move Cole Tucker to shortstop. You know what I hate? All these Cole Tucker people. Cole Tucker sucks. He hit 110 in the second half. He hit 110 when he came up here. He hit 160. He was so bad. He can't play defense. Come on.
And you also got to give him a break because look at Kevin Newman.
I know. I'm coming.
Up was terrible. Now he's back up and he's great.
I'm coming from that perspective because I was one of those people that were trashing Kevin Newman September where he hit 120 or 200. I don't know what it was, but it was very bad. And he was committing like 8 errors an inning or something. Remember that game against the Cubs?
Did you say 8 errors an inning?
He committed
That's a lot of errors.
He committed three errors in one inning in a game at Wrigley. And, oh, was that unwatchable. But after that, Kevin Newman, absolutely phenomenal bounce-back season where he was the starting shortstop, playing great coming back from injury, and just rode the wave hitting .320. Great to see. I'd move him to second, and I make my character, my face of the franchise, Cole Tucker at shortstop. I love this kid. I think he can play. He can run. The strokes coming at the plate. He plays great defense. He's very rangy. Got a good arm. I wouldn't say he's a 5-tool guy. I don't know if the power will necessarily be there, but he's definitely a Neil Walker type of guy.
He showed the power a couple times. He hit one off the back green the one time. I was
at Cole Tucker and Brian Reynolds' first game with Nick Pouch and Nick Terrett, I think. I'm not exactly sure who I was with. Nick Terrett was there.
Probably Nick Pouch.
Probably Nick Pouch. Whenever the Knicks get together, funny side note before I move on. Nick Terrett gets Joey Shields and Nick Pouch confused. Why? I don't know. Because he sits in the front he sits in the front seat in my car, and then he'll say, like, Pouch, when Joey Shields is actually in the back. And then when Pouch is in the back, he'll say, Shields! And he just messes it up. Love you, Nick Terrett, but that's something that has to be corrected. And let's go back to Tucker.
How do you do that?
I don't know. They're very different people. Let's go back to Cole Tucker, though. I really think that he could be a very good glue guy, face of the franchise type of player for the Pirates, especially if he can hit, because the field, glove, character, range, athletic type of player that could be a star in this league is here.
And I agree with you. I think he could definitely be. I don't know if he's a face of a franchise type player, you know, coming behind McCutchen, Marte, and Bell, those type of guys that have been sort of the face of the franchise. But come on, how much do you have to live up to? Because besides Kevin Newman, what shortstops have been good for the Pirates in the past 30 years?
Clint
Bowers.
Ronnie Cedeno. Come on now.
Jack Wilson 30 years ago.
Jack Wilson.
20 years ago or so.
It was 20 years ago.
No, it was like the early 2000s.
He was there in the later 2000s too with Freddie Sanchez.
Freddie Sanchez was winning the batting title.
That duo in the middle infield. But, I mean, Tucker doesn't have much to live up to because he can set the ceiling with his career. If he ends up being really good, which hopefully he does, if he hits an average of like 285, more than that, but the power, again, like you said, probably will most likely not be there.
Probably 15 to 20 once it all plays out.
But, I mean, in typical baseball, and the Pirates have relied on good defensive shortstops, so I don't think they're going to look for too much of hitting from him. So I think he can really set the bar high.
Yeah, and I think he's going to hit a little better than people think. And I also think that the Pirates do have some hope eventually. It will be a while. Everybody's back healthy this year except James and Tyone. I look at the prospects, and, I mean, somehow, some way, I believe it was FanGraphs only a few days ago, ranked the top 100 prospects in baseball. Okay, they ranked the prospects like every...
We have six.
Like every baseball team does. And they ranked the Pirates with six.
That's top 100 prospects.
What? Huh?
I was...
What?
When we were sitting in news writing, I saw that. And I was like, wait, what?
I saw that too, yeah. But point being...
Who was the highest?
Someone is very optimistic about this future for the Pirates. And... Well, I get it.
Cabrian Hayes, I think, was the highest.
As I look it up right now, and I just cannot find it.
It was like Cabrian Hayes, then.
Cabrian Hayes was one. I believe O'Neill Cruz was two.
And then Mitch Keller followed him.
He was only two spots behind.
And they're in like the top 30, too.
Yeah, they threw Travis Swaggerty in here.
What a bunch of kind guys giving us optimism. Unbelievable.
I guess. It was Fangraphs. Here is the official Fangraphs list. And Cabrian Hayes is ranked 30th, O'Neill Cruz 32nd, Mitch Keller 34th. So
I'm assuming, is it Rushman at first, or who's first? Who's
Wait, did
one?
They not watch
number
Mitch Keller last year in the major leagues? That they're putting him at 34th.
He's still a prospect. Wow. How about it goes 30, 32, 34? San Francisco Giants World Series Championships 2010, 2012, 2014. That has nothing to do with anything. I just thought the numbers were cool. But maybe
I was about to say, were you trying to like string a conspiracy theory up here?
Pirates can win three. Right, Pirates can win three World Series. We'll be lucky if they win one. Other players that are ranked: Travis Swaggerty somehow got 61st when he can't even crack the MLB Pipeline or Baseball America rankings. He was ranked that high. Look, I think he has some potential as a center fielder, but Fangraphs, you're very high on him, which I mean, that's great. Tanaj Thomas, who the Pirates got in the Eric Gonzalez deal, the actual player that they probably wanted in the Eric Gonzalez deal. He's ranked 78th, and he's only in rookie ball. Projected 2022 arrival. He's only 20. He's going to be a reliever. He throws about 100. They have him starting, but he's going to move to the bullpen eventually. This is a future closer. He's got lights out stuff. And final guy on the list, Leover Peguero. 98, the shortstop acquired in the Marte deal. So,
hey, he's in there.
Yeah, he's in there, right? So a little bit of encouraging stuff right there in terms of Pirates prospects. Another thing to note, Shane Baz was ranked 116th, so that Archer trade still looks great, right? I think there's a lot of potential with the prospects. A lot of guys under 21 that are going to be coming up at the same time. You would hope it's going to be the same wave in terms of McCutchen, Neil Walker, Pedro, Josh Harrison, Garrett Cole eventually. That whole wave that came up and led the way to the next Pirates relevant team winning playoff games, winning one, two, not many.
All of like what, three.
We won
2 again. Who'd we play?
Cardinals 2 and the Reds 1.
And then we got... And then Kyle Schwarber sent that ball into the Allegheny.
Yeah, and before the game, I threw my Jolly Roger on the ground.
Who hit the grand slam in the Giants game? Carl Crawford? Yeah. No, not Crawford.
Brandon Crawford.
There we go. Or was it Brandon Belt? One of the two.
Yeah. It was Crawford. It was Crawford. He crushed that ball.
Garrett Cole's his brother-in-law.
Oh, good times.
What if he would have hit it off Garrett Cole? That would have been even worse.
And then
good times.
Yeah. Oh, what's it called? And then Jake Arrieta, who I'm pretty sure was on steroids when he pitched against us.
Oh, my God. He had, like, the best statistical season ever. His ERA was, like, 0.5. It was better than Bob Gibson in 68. It was insane.
Do you think he was on steroids when he was pitching with the Cubs?
No, but... I don't know. Something was up.
Who was pitching that game that he just beamed him? Like, seventh inning. Was that Cole still or, like, someone else was pitching?
No,
I don't know.
Remember Sean Rodriguez tried to fight him?
Yeah, and then he punched the water.
Wasn't it Edison Volquez that started our 2014 wildcard game instead of Garrett Cole?
Yeah.
We all wanted – everybody wanted Garrett Cole to start. And then in 2015, everybody wanted J-Hap to start, and then J-Hap didn't start.
And then J-Hap went on to have
that
a
was
–
Frankie Liriano started in 2015, correct?
No, that was Garrett Cole got bombed.
Oh.
Could you imagine
that was a reoccurring theme, Garrett Cole getting bombed.
I will continue to say to this day, if the Pirates would have won that wild card game, they would have won the World Series. I don't care what anybody says. I don't care how good that Royals
because
team might have been.
I remember hearing stuff that, like, that Pirates team was built for
that
seven games.
That was the
game.
Best team.
That was built for a seven-game series. That team wasn't built to win one game.
No, that team was not built for one game. And I swear they would have won the World Series.
Hey, that's why they're trying to change it.
It would still be happy times in Pirateville because it'd be the first World Series in however,
since 79.
40-so years or so, 30-some years. Now let's move on to something that is also coming back. We don't know when the World Series will eventually come back, but the XFL has come back in 2020. And attendance is in the first on Saturday's games last week. They were in the 17,000s, and attendance has already surpassed, I believe, what the Alliance of American Football got.
Pretty good. Some nice stadiums they play at, though. Yeah. You got baseball fields, you got soccer fields, you also got football fields.
Kind of weird. They're playing Dallas is playing at Globe Life Park,
yeah,
where the Rangers used to play. That's
Jerry was like, no, you're not playing here. So they had to find someone else.
Jerry was like, Jerry? Not happening in Dallas. It's not happening in Jerry World.
You're not playing in Jerry World?
Hey, the Texas Rangers got their new ballpark. Maybe the Dallas team will stay.
But yeah, I watched
the old Globe Life.
I watched the highlights. It's not terrible football.
No, it's and Hard I wrote hitting. In I wrote in my notes to say not bad football. It wasn't bad. I really wasn't. I watched, I think, three out of the four games, and I caught glimpses and pieces of the fourth one.
I don't think I saw Landry Jones play, though.
We did play? Cardale Jones.
Yeah, the quarterbacks.
Cardale Jones!
I wrote in my notes also, quarterbacks aren't good. I meant to say they are good, but at the same time, they're kind of not. Some of them are good, some
Dude,
of them are
Andy,
not.
Andy Murray looked awful.
Yeah, and there was one throw he made that was absolutely phenomenal along the sideline, or in the middle of the field, I don't remember. But then he threw a ball into the back of the end zone, and it was a wounded duck lofting up looking like Duck Hodges in the back of the end zone.
But Cardale Jones didn't look bad, though. I don't think he did. He made a couple. He always had a cannon of an arm.
The XFL. Who was the XFL like player of the week at quarterback?
Was that PJ Tucker?
Walker?
Walker. He was really good.
I think that's who they named their offensive player of the week or whatever. Player of the week.
Yeah, because he kind of reminds me of, like, Kyler Murray.
Yeah,
he was like super quick, like, able to be mobile in the pocket, small. But let me see. Oh, go back. It was go back a couple pictures. Was it? I think it was.
Big J Journalism. Looking up sources on the site right now. Looking up information.
Yeah, what the
Big J Journalism.
Big J.
All right, you're just not gonna get the answer though. Website is nice.
It takes time to be able to perfect Big J Journalism. It's fine. Another thing, it's hard to perfect. Well, actually, isn't at all.
Also, what do you think of the kickoffs?
The whole point conversion. That is a good thing we should talk about that I forgot to mention. So kickoffs, very weird.
I feel like it gives you a lot bigger chance of getting a bigger return.
So the team kicks off the ball like regular football, but
nobody moves.
No, my God. No, I don't even know how to explain this.
I can explain it.
No, I'll try, and then you can correct me.
Okay.
So the players stand on the opponent. So they kick the ball from the 30-yard line, all right?
Pretty normal so far.
The 30-yard line. So it's a little bit different than the NFL's 35 or so, whatever it may be. But that's not the point. Point is, the other players stand at the 35, okay, on the other side of the field, or some yard marker around there. And it might be the 30. And they are lined up. And they wait. Now,
they don't move.
What do they wait for? They wait for the returner to catch the football. And then, once they notice that the returner has caught the football, they are eligible to move.
And all hell breaks loose.
Yeah. I necessarily think it was very awkward looking and blatantly weird. I did not like the idea of, let's have everybody stand there, not move. And if you do, let's call you for a false start. And, oh, man, I don't like the fact that, look, so one thing I do like before I go into what I don't like. So you cannot kick off the ball into the ball cannot hit the end zone. You cannot get the ball into the end zone or else it's a penalty. And you can't kick the ball shorter than the 20-yard line or else it's a penalty. You know, why is it be a penalty? Because you'll probably hit one of your teammates that you're kicking the ball in the back of the head.
Decently accurate kicker to put it
in. Yeah, we saw Matt McCrain. Remember Matt McCrain made 3 field goals for the Steelers in that AB Browns game or whatever you want to call it, rooting for the Browns. And then Matt McCrane is going to kick in the XFL. He's been doing pretty good.
But I feel like a lot of XFL kickers will get a tryout for NFL teams at some point.
Who's the one dude, King, that's one of the kickers?
Marquette King.
Yeah. He
was an all-pro punter.
I don't know what the deal was with the NFL, why they got the Raiders.
Yeah, he went to Denver, I think it was. It was not great. And
Do you see they have Pat McAfee aside?
Yeah, Pat McAfee was reporting. That was fun to watch.
Did you see Marquette King dropped a punt, and it was at the one. Yeah. And he was like, what are you doing?
I saw that, and he touched it and took it into the end zone, one of his teammates.
He's like, what are you doing?
Real, live, accurate reporting on the site.
I want to go out there right now.
He was like, oh, my God, Pat, I thought you were going to run out there down for him.
Yeah, real, live, accurate reporting there from good old Pat McAfee.
Oh, Pat McAfee, what a...
So overall first impressions of the XFL this first week.
Wouldn't call it great.
I think it's okay.
I mean, for spring football, I'll take it.
Football. What I say is, this was the first week people went, people watched on TV. About 2.5 million, I think ESPN had their one of their broadcasts in. But we'll see how the weeks progress because. It might just lose interest. March Madness, this thing is not going to be in. No one's going
to
care about
this. Yeah, I think it's something nice to lay back on after the Super Bowl, but for only for a few weeks because there's other sports that are way bigger that are just going to take more of, you know, the television views and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, all it has to do is last longer than the AFL.
The Alliance, which is like 8 weeks. Which is like,
Two weeks? 3 weeks?
Yeah, that, you know, nice coffee break, the AAF in preparation for the XFL. Now let's go to someone that needs coffee. The irrelevant fact of the day, I have something I want to say.
Are you seriously going to do this?
So, these last few weeks have been very long, tiresome, and boring. This is not a promotion for anything. If it is, it's a promotion for sleep. Now, people, I am giving you firsthand experiences. I am very tired. I need my rest. I need my sleep. And, you know... Oh, well, life duty calls, working with Century Media, basketball games, dealing with these two in my dorm, being loud and Golbash trying
to... Wait a minute! Whoa.
Kidding, I'm loud. But Golbash watching 13 seasons of Criminal Minds in 2 days or so, trying to get it all completed for the finale.
I
knew you guys would be mad about the loud complaint, that's why I said it.
I'm skipping my class today. I have to go watch 8 more episodes.
So my irrelevant fact of the day is please get sleep. And my other irrelevant fact of the day is that the Steelers put out a Valentine a couple of days ago, which caught my eye.
In
the
words of
Minka Fitzpatrick on the picture and said, I would give up my first round pick for you. There are not many people I would give up my first round pick for.
Minka Fitzpatrick is one of them.
Well, maybe. Hopefully we can find someone this Valentine's Day season that you can find that gave up your first round pick for, because I don't give up my first round pick. Even for Minka. Actually, I would give it up for Minka. Never mind. That's your irrelevant fact of the day. Kind of rambling on a little bit.
I really thought...
It was kind of bad.
His original irrelevant fact was supposed to be about Andrew Yang, who was...
Yes. So, also, we'll go into that. We're going to head into... We're going to head into I'm sorry. I have two. One, I want to go to Andrew Yang. Look, I already know who I'm going to vote for in the general election. I'm not going to say it because we don't want to make people angry. But
Andrew Yang. Sports show?
Yes.
Is this
I'm saying I'm sorry to Andrew Yang because.
Is this sports talking the bird
because,
or political,
you know,
talking the bird?
Because, you know, he seemed kind of cool. Like, Andrew Yang seemed kind of cool, but he got no support. So I'm sorry, Andrew Yang, you got no support. I wouldn't have voted for you anyway, but you see, I mean, he seemed like a very down to earth guy with all these, like, politicians that like to talk about big spending and stuff. Andrew Yang seemed really cool.
What do you mean? He wanted to give everyone $1,000 a month? Everyone.
Thanks, I can pay for college. I'm also sorry to Kalen Addison. You were going to be very good with the Penguins. Now you get to go up Minnesota, and, you know, who knows what type of organization you're really going to now.
Minnesota's the hockey capital of the world. Hockey capital of the U.S.
Yep, and also the hockey capital of the bottom of the standings.
Of mediocrity.
And
high school hockey.
So, Kalen Addison, I'm sorry you had to be traded. I wish you could have stuck around for a little bit. Hopefully this Zucker guy could be any good and deliver us a Stanley Cup and not be Derek Brassard 2.0.
All right, I'm sorry. I mean, I guess we'll talk about them maybe a little bit later. Is the hometown Pitt Panthers. Pitt's inconsistent is actually, I guess, the best way to put it. Mediocrity at its finest. Coming back a little bit from two horrible years, a bad loss to Clemson last night, 72-52. terrible. They win again. They won their last game, and now they can't even put a couple wins together. Pitt just being Pitt.
Yeah,
I
they
guess.
Sucked last night. We'll get into that more in a second. Let's go to Golbash, though.
And I would like to say I'm sorry to Jason Zucker for receiving all this hate about how he's going to be a bust, especially from the person sitting right across from me.
Well, I want to shout out my friend Martin, who runs the Berg Sports account on Instagram. I don't know why I'm saying that.
Martin?
But I think his name's Martin. I'm not exactly sure. But we got into it. Oh, God, that just tells you the state of these days that we've been going through with no sleep. But so Martin, okay, or whatever his name may be.
Like,
I'm not
Martin.
Exactly sure. We got into a debate over the trade for Jason Zucker. And he basically said, hey, it's not as bad as you think it is. I replied to his story and said, way too much. Had to be either the first round pick or Addison. And he said, why? So I said, because Zucker's numbers aren't great and Addison is the best prospect. He did not think Addison is the best prospect. But he also thought you're
actually, who did he think is the best prospect?
That is a great question that he did not answer.
Poland?
That's what I think.
But Poland, is he talking about defense?
And then he also said, I actually don't see many people on the beat who think it's an overpay. Actually, the opposite. So then I went on to take screenshots of Josh Joey and Jason Mackey saying that it was an overpay. And he said, yeah, okay. And
yeah.
He said prospects don't always pan out. I'll take Zucker for part of four seasons for a lottery ticket in Addison. So shout out to the Berg Sports account, who I'm probably going to be playing fantasy baseball with again this year, for having our debate like that. But I don't know if this trade will work out.
And I would like to mention Zucker is two seasons when the Wild made the playoffs. He scored 33 goals.
In his postseason career?
No, I'm talking like in the regular season.
The year that they went.
Jake Gensel if he did that.
The year he did. He had 33 goals. I mean, and like what? Who's on the Wild? Give him Sid. All he has to do is just put his stick on the ice, and he'll score. That's how good of a player Sid is. He'll make everybody around him better, and I can just see his trade working out.
All right, let's go to those Pitt Panthers. Me, Joey Shields, the Pitt guy that goes to Pitt that might be transferring, that probably won't be transferring.
That is a fan of UNC.
Who is now an undecided major. I am the fan of UNC, but also a fan of Pitt. And we went with Colin, who blew us off for two noon games because he can never do anything past.
Wait, he went?
Colin went.
He went to the game?
Colin usually cannot do anything with us before 2 p.m. because he's either tired, sleeping, or who knows what he's doing.
Or working.
Or
doing something. Or having a meeting.
Saying that he's going to the gym early in the morning, even though he did it once and he thought it was going to be a routine.
Or having a meeting.
Pitt getting crushed, 72-52. I shouldn't say crushed, because it was a 10-point game like 5 minutes ago. And it was a 9-point game with about 8 minutes to go. So, you know, it wasn't that bad. But Pitt got off to an awful start. They couldn't shoot. Trey McGowan's again tries to take over the game. Xavier Johnson with his dribble moves that don't work. Sometimes they do.
Xavier Johnson looking like a my player.
Sometimes
2K
they do.
With all the dribble
moves.
Yeah,
Westbrook and Harden getting closer to 500 for the Pitt basketball team over here. I don't know.
I think
Adis Toney and Justin Champagne are getting phenomenally better.
Champagne, double digits the past three games.
He scored 32
games
ago.
Actually, more than that, because he had 20 against Notre Dame, 30 against Georgia Tech, and now 11. But he was National Player of the Week, Freshman of the Week,
yeah,
somewhere, some sports journalism thing voted him that.
It's the power of the fro.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's just the different and the two guys that are supposed to be your best players in McGowan's and Johnson just not performing up to the expectations.
I mean, they were projected late first, early second round picks.
They still expect them to leave after this year because, you know, I'm hearing people talking. They're like, oh, Toney and Champagne are going to be the guys next year. Not saying Johnson and McGowan's are going to be here anymore because they expect them to leave.
Well, I don't know who told you about the Xavier Johnson thing, but I've been hearing from my anonymous sources.
Oh.
Xavier Johnson is not exactly happy. As happy as his sister dancing on the Jumbotron at every single Pitt basketball game, which is actually really cool. They put her up on the Jumbotron every time.
Do you think he's just going to leave?
She always gets the crowd hype, which is fun, sitting in the student section. But I don't know. I don't know if Johnson will stay. I think he should. Well, I don't know. I don't know if it's in his best interest to stay with all the prospects that Pitt's bringing in next year.
But they're not bringing any.
Except
Ethio Horton, who's sitting on the bench.
Yeah, Ethio Horton, that's who I mean.
He's the only, like, guard I think that's coming in this class. So they kind of need as many guards that they can get to stay.
Yeah,
if McCowens and Johnson are planning on leaving.
I think Tony. Yeah, I don't think they both leave. I don't think that happens.
Remember when you're saying how bad Audis Tony is?
Yeah.
Well, because he literally had a complete
he was
180.
Awful.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I know. He came out of nowhere. Audis
Tony. He bowled out in that Duke game.
I'm sorry, Audis Tony. You're playing phenomenal.
That should have been your I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, Andrew Yang.
He had a double-double when we went and saw them play Miami.
Yeah, and I don't know. There's times when Audis Tony's the best player on the floor, and there's also times when he's one of the worst players on the floor. We kind of saw how bad he was at the Pitt-RMU game.
Barely scored.
And then a couple games ago, I think it was against North Carolina, he was really good. He was phenomenal. Point is, you don't know what you're going to get from this basketball team. There's no type of consistent
just play. Just like all Pitt sports teams.
I mean, I guess right now with Capel coming in under his second year and also these young players, it's growing pains.
Yeah.
It's going to happen, but yeah. It just seems like they actually have a really good team this year that can compete against any team. Not just against teams that they should be beating, but they played Duke pretty close. They played Louisville close earlier in the year, keeping them within like
close.
8 points.
They had them beat.
Yeah, there's been several games against really good opponents that they could have beaten. North Carolina, they beat them twice. Which, oh yeah, North Carolina is like 10-14, but
they're last in the conference.
Yeah, but look,
don't worry until next year when the five-star recruits coming in.
Yeah, but look at the players they have now. They had 5 stars and 4 stars when we played
them.
So
they have
anyway.
A top 5 pick. They have Cole. Young
so,
Cole Anthony.
I just thought at this point in the year with Notre Dame, Georgia Tech, and Clemson, I thought they could string a couple wins together, but that just ended up not happening. They could have won on a 4-game win streak right now with Miami earlier in February with that win. I just thought they could have put a couple games together, maybe get into the NIT. NCAA was out of
yeah,
I just
think
I just thought that was too I thought that was too unrealistic to start the year, to be honest. I knew that was not going to be the case. That they were going to make that tournament. But the NIT, still in consideration, but if they continue to lose, because they play VTech next, and then number 8 Florida State. So they have, and Virginia after that, and then Syracuse. So they have just a bunch of tough opponents to finish off the year. They have NC State and Georgia Tech to finish the year off in the last 2 games. Those should be wins, and then they have the tournament, the ACC tournament. So they can still win a couple games, maybe find their way into a postseason tournament besides the ACC tournament. But
maybe the nobody's interested tournament or the yeah. The CBI or something.
Yeah, but it's just extra play.
They'll be in the NIT.
Yeah.
Now let's go to talking NIT tournament to NBA and their proposed in-season tournament that is never going to work. Let's talk NBA real quick. Lakers, Clippers, Rockets still can't shoot. Milwaukee Bucks are good. What's your takes on the NBA? We don't talk NBA much. What are your thoughts on the NBA so far this season, and what are you thinking down the stretch is going to happen with the trade deadline now gone?
Well, I think the league is in good hands with all these young stars we have coming up. I mean, Jaw's a certified stud. Zion's only played, 5-7 games? He's already turning in. I mean, to be completely honest with you.
You just got to think about the Sheets experience.
we
got a story for you.
We got a story for you. Okay, so
me and Colin went to Sheets last night.
So it was Zion's debut game. It was on that Wednesday. Me and Nate were out playing hockey.
Okay,
and
I was watching it in the room.
Yeah, so we went to Sheets.
It was me, Andrew, his brother Alex, and Devin. We're at Sheets.
and our buddy Devin. Oh, so we go there. We watch the game. Zion's in. Zion, he's done nothing. I've looked at his stats. He's done nothing. So we're there eating our food. Zion
starts splashing.
Zion
stuff.
Gets a three. We're like, okay, and then another three. He's the greatest player ever. And then
he came. He had a nice rebound, too. One of those putback rebounds. He grabbed it.
He snatched
back here, yeah.
And then, he hit the crazy, hit the little dribble.
He
made someone drop
back. He did the fake step.
Yeah, fake step and then pulled it. And then we all got up out of our seats and started losing our mind. And all of a sudden, I hear, boom. And then I hear something hit the ground. I turn around. Nate fell over. Nate fell off his chair.
I was laughing.
Zion played
hard.
So well that Nate fell off his chair.
Well, that's just encouraging.
I was laughing so hard that I just fell backwards. Anyways, but
yeah, Colin and I watched the game, and Colin was always saying, John Morant's going to be better. And
no,
I said, Colin, watch the game. I put the replay back on. He was like, oh, okay, nice shot. Oh, okay. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Oh, he's one of the best players in the NBA. I was like, yeah.
No, but I.
He is a day removed. He scored. He had 39-5 in 28 minutes of play.
Yeah, and he's not shooting ineffectively like James Harden is, putting up 30 shots.
10-17.
I did want to mention Ja Morant. I mean, I watched some of his highlights last night. just he's playing out of his mind right now. He's leading this relatively okay Memphis team into the eighth seed of the playoffs right now. And they could surprise some teams. I'm not saying to win a series, but definitely take it the length.
Mm-hmm. I would like to mention to not sleep on this Memphis team. Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson, Valanciunas. I mean,
Brandon Clark's playing out of his mind too right now.
I mean, yeah, their first round pick. They had two picks in that draft, right? Clark and Morant, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this team is just full of young talent. And honestly, is that Josh Jackson I see?
Yeah. Wait.
Like, that is a bunch of young talent within the past couple of years. Is that the Josh Jackson I'm thinking
yeah.
of? Yeah. Because
he didn't pan out.
He didn't pan out with the Suns. Or was he the Suns?
Yep.
Yeah, he didn't pan out with the Suns, so now he's here. I mean, I don't know. Yep. I just see a whole bunch of hope for the NBA coming soon with Luka and all these guys. I mean, once LeBron and them leave, I mean, I feel like this league will just be...
I mean,
and just being right as a good spot as they left it.
There's just the different waves. I mean, you see Kobe and, like, AI, and then you come in with LeBron...
Wade,
and
Bosch.
The different waves, and like Tim Duncan and guys like those, and now it's just continuing on and growing.
I saw something that like, what was it? Never mind. But I saw something. It was like every 5 or 10 years, a player in the draft becomes a top 5 player of all time.
Yeah, but how about the Raptors though? I wanted to mention them as well. What a 15-game win streak that was just finally broken by the Nets, but. For a team that came off a championship win last season and then losing Kawhi, not a lot of people thought they would be sitting second right now. I mean,
yeah,
still a playoff team.
You lose a top 5 player in the game, and you're 40-15. I know it's the East, but phenomenal.
Still play.
But I mean, the East is nowhere close to the West, but you're not. You can't say that there aren't good teams in the East anymore.
The East and the West are actually not that bad, like
yeah,
comparatively
not.
Wise. I mean, the West, all their teams are over 500 in the playoff picture. It wasn't that way not too long ago, with
and
Memphis being 2 games over now.
With
Brooklyn and Orlando are the 7-8 in the East.
Now is Kevin Durant coming back at all this year?
No,
no, he
okay.
should not be.
But now my question is for you guys: who comes out of the East to make it to the NBA Finals?
Everyone had Milwaukee last year until they didn't, but...
I got Milwaukee again. I think Giannis and them will be able to figure it out.
I think it just wasn't their time. I mean, I thought what the Raptors had was special. I mean, after coming back, Kawhi hitting that shot, it kind of just... It was another year of destiny in the year of sports.
Giannis is averaging 30 a game. They got Brook Lopez, Chris Middleton's playing really well, Eric Bledsoe playing well again. Consistent play off the bench. They added Marvin Williams. It was bought out by the Charlotte Hornets. He's got a bunch of consistent solid
players.
Hey,
fun fact, Austin, you want to talk about your team, Charlotte Hornets?
No, I don't want to talk about them. There's nothing to talk about. They bought off half the roster. But my surprise team in the East is Miami.
I would say Miami.
I was going to say Miami.
35-19. I thought that they would sneak in as maybe the 7 or the 8.
They have a commanding fourth seed.
Yeah, I think that's that's very easy to
agree. With, I must in mind, talks of getting Embiid.
They're not getting Embiid. Trey Jalen has passed. But Jimmy Butler and the rest of the guys that got on that team, Bam Adebayo is playing phenomenal. They're really stepping up. One thing I look at for Miami, though, they are 22-3 at home. They are 13-16 on the road. Yeah, if you want to talk even worse, let's go to Embiid's team. Philadelphia, 25-2 at home, 9-19 on the road. Yikes, Goldberg. Your team's not very great on the road.
Goldberg.
Man, not every game, I'm sorry to tell you, is played in either Philadelphia or in Miami. Those are the two weaknesses that I look at for those teams. Milwaukee's 21-5 on the road. Milwaukee, I think, pulls it out.
Now, what about in the West?
I don't
want to talk about teams that you think are going to the finals. What about teams that are sitting outside the playoff picture that you think might roll in? What about? I mean, Damian Lillard has the hot hand right now.
Memphis is out. Damian Lillard
just got hurt.
That's it for Portland. I don't think they make it.
He's not going to be out that long.
He's just out of the All-Star
game.
I don't trust Memphis. I don't. I know John Morant's great. I don't trust the pieces around them right now. They're very young.
Yeah,
I don't think down the stretch.
They're rolling, but they're going to hit that,
now,
down
that
the stretch.
Here, do you think that Zion and all that young brings the Pelicans on a run to get them in?
They're doing it right now. They're 6-4 in their last 10. They've won 3 in a row. 23-31 currently right now.
Do I see that right? Is that OKC at the 7th seed?
Yeah, Chris Paul.
They're having a great year.
And the boys are playing pretty well there.
Shea Gilgis.
New Orleans is currently 5 back of Memphis. And I don't know. I don't think they can make up the ground. I really don't, because I think Portland's going to surge in the second half.
Portland 6-4 in their last 10 on a two-game losing skid, though.
But can I talk about my favorite team? My favorite team to hate on, Houston Rockets.
Oh man.
This is so, so predictable. Look, they're the fifth seed in the West. Congratulations, Houston Rockets. You're the fifth in the West. Your home record is 19-8, and your road record is 15-12. Okay, not too bad. You're fifth in the West. You're not bad. Above you, and you could easily go up to third or even second, because you're only a couple games back at Denver. Only 3.5 back at Denver is the number two seed right now, with the Lakers being number one. Houston. Oh man. Aren't they great?
They don't even have any size though.
Everyone is 6'5 or shorter.
How are they supposed to match up with the Lakers when they have AD and Dwight Howard and all those guys? Won't.
Great job, Daryl Morey. Let's trade Clint Capella because we need what? No big men. Look, I'm not a fan of big men basketball anymore, but you need one.
And then you have Harden just throwing up threes left and right, going shooting 33s in one game, and then only hitting like one or two of them. Like,
two of my favorite players that I don't like. God bless you, Goldvash. James Harden, 35.
That wasn't a sneeze.
I'm aware. 35 points per game for James Harden. Wow. He's shooting 47%. He's shooting 36 from three. All right. How many shots is James Harden actually taking, though?
Wait, who's at the bottom of the list?
James Harden, you play 37 minutes.
Is that Golden State at the bottom of the West?
Yeah, when your three best players get hurt. Hey, don't worry. Andrew Wiggins, Steph Curry.
The savior. Andrew Wiggins.
No. The number two overall pick, James Wiseman. This Warriors team's going to be right back to the top of the West. Just watch.
He's not even projected the first overall pick anymore.
Maybe the second overall pick.
It's called Anthony Edwards.
Well, it doesn't matter. The Warriors are going to get James
Carson?
Wiseman.
Carson.
Warriors are going to get Wiseman, and it's going to be great.
Timberwolves are 16-37?
Yeah, they're not great. That's why they traded all their players.
They traded one.
Yeah, well, they should trade more. They're not good. So I look at Houston, and I say, yay, Harden can't shoot. He kind of can, but he puts up like 50 shots a game, so at least he's going to make half of them, right? You would hope. No, more like 40%. And then Russell Westbrook. How about let's drive to the hoop? I can't shoot. So I'm going to clog up the lane that James Harden loves to use. Look, this team is not going to work in the playoffs. You have Mr. December and Mr. January and Harden and Westbrook that love to win Players of the Month awards. They're not someone that are going to be able to flourish in the playoff picture. Look, you trade your big men, and you have no big men to be able to match up against the Lakers, be able to match up against Rudy Gobert, Anthony Davis, the bigs that the Clippers throw out at you. It's not going to work for them. And I think that They just don't have enough. They don't have the shooter. They don't have the capable shooters as their best players are not capable shooters. James Harden is let's play dribble ISO basketball and isolate everyone else on the team, and it's not worth it. So that's your NBA talk for the day. We'll get into it another time. Let's quickly round out the show with predictions. First one: will the Penguins beat the Canadiens on Friday on Valentine's Day?
Yes, Canadians haven't been. Carey Price hasn't been his usual self this season. Canadians have gone through a lot of injuries, and I think
Canadians are on a hot streak though. Like they've won 7 out of 11. They just got dumped on by the Bruins though, 4-1.
Exactly. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the Canadians this year. They've lost a couple of their players and Shea Weber just got injured, I believe. Like you said, Nate. So I say Pens take it by a score 4-1.
Pens usually play the Canadians pretty well. I say the Pens win. I say 2-0. I think Jari gets a shutout.
Pens win 4-2. Zucker scores 2 goals.
I say Zucker finally scores on Sunday when I'm in attendance when they play Detroit.
That would be great. I think Zucker actually just scores 1. It'd be cool to see him score 2. I don't think it'll happen. Where will Pitt basketball finish in the ACC standings?
Well, your prediction was 5th. I'm going to go.
Well, I said that was their ceiling. I said that at the beginning of the year.
Well, what are they currently?
I think they're 8th or 9th right now.
I say they creep up to 7 or 6.
Yeah, maybe. They're going to finish the middle of the pack how they sort of were predicted at the beginning of the year. They're right now what?
Not great.
They're eighth. They're eight.
Yeah. I say they get to 7 and then they become the 5 in the NIT tournament.
I'm also shocked they lost to Notre Dame as well.
Let's throw an RMU in there because why not?
AJ Brahma?
Will RMU men's basketball continue their hot stretch tonight against Mount St. Mary's?
I think they win. I think you look at AJ Brahma, like we just mentioned. Brahma.
You get a double-double from AJ Brahma and a bunch of scoring from all the other pieces.
I mean, right now they're sitting tied with Merrimack, so if they get a big win tonight And also, Merrimack's ineligible to host the conference tournament. So.
Right. I say that RMU wins by 5, and the Breaking with Bechtel segment on CSC is the positive one tonight. Now, my favorite prediction of the day. Saw the billboard out down in downtown Oakland. Will the Pitt Panthers get a stadium anytime soon?
No.
Actually, yes, they will, because Pitt has money, and they want to spend that money.
No,
yes,
but where do you put this stadium? You're going to put it on top of their dorms or something?
It's going to go on top of the cathedral.
All right, I hope Joey Shield is listening. I know he's not, because no one really knows that we changed the time of the show to Thursdays. I think that Pitt definitely needs a stadium. I don't care what you have to move. I don't care what you have to get rid of. Joey Shields always gets mad because he says that I want to tear down all the houses at the South Oakland. And yes, have you ever drove past South Oakland? Yeah, they're not the prettiest looking sites. You could put Pitt Stadium right there. I think it could work wherever it's going to go. I think Heather Light's going to figure something out. There's a website about the new Pitt Stadium that people are trying to, you know, put out there. But that's a story from another time. All right, let's do shout-outs. Nate, go ahead.
Shout out to my mom. Her birthday is this weekend, the 16th.
Happy birthday, Nate's Mrs. Breisinger.
Shout out to my grandma, as they probably will be listening to it tomorrow. Shout out to my sister, who liked my tweet.
Wow, congratulations.
Tweet. So shout out to them. Shout out to anybody else who's listening right now.
Tweet, little birdie. Go ahead, Goldbash.
Shout out Goldberg.
Goldberg.
Shout out my mom, my brother, who is an absolute moron, but love him to death. Shout out my dad. For giving me some of my sports talk information, and love you guys so much, and thanks for raising me.
Shout out to Rush and Soma. We don't talk to them, but we hope one day they will, because they never talk to us. But we hope that we talk to them one day.
And also,
during the middle of the show, I want to give a shout out to the RMU Books Store for sending out an email to me that said 30% off frames, and they also claimed what a great deal. I don't know what that's supposed to mean, but thanks for sending me that email.
And I would also like to say, shout out Jerry from
shout out to Jerry from
Big Brother, who's still kicking it at 88 years old.
He's still doing great.
Sports show, not a drama show.
Shout out to Jerry. I also want to shout out my family as always. That is it for the show this week. Wow, what a show we had. This was fun. Maybe we can be this enthusiastic and energetic on the next show. We'll try to be better next time. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Austin Bechtold.
I'm Nathan Breisinger.
And I. Hey, Major Goldberg.
We'll see you when we see you. Have a great next week, weekend, everything that comes in between.
And you can listen to this absolute mess of a show we have.
Listen to this on RMU Radio and all other RMU platforms. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week.